All righty, I'd like to welcome everyone to this meeting of the Public Outreach and Legislation Committee. I have some announcements before we start. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or the Zoom webinar link. In the event that there is a disruption of service, which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item that you wish to speak on, please click on the raised hand feature in Zoom. You'll be notified when it is your turn to speak, and please unmute when requested. To speak in public comment via the phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by your name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. To the public attending in person, there are public comment cards on the table outside. Please complete those and return them to the administrator to expedite public comment. The procedure for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comment. I will then ask for discussion and questions from the committee members. The committee will come to a consensus to move the item to the board for consideration, if relevant. We will consider putting items on the consent calendar when possible. Any PowerPoints shown at tonight's meeting will be posted on the SCB Water website. Tonight we have all committee members except for Ed Cawley. And at this point, we can do the Pledge of Allegiance. I would like Director Bronstein to do the pledge for us tonight.
Please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do we have any public comment on non-agenda items? And do you see any? We do not. Okay. We will move on to item 3, the legislative consultant report. The first one being 3.1, presented by Jeff Bowman from Vanscoyuc Associates.
Thank you. It's good to see everybody tonight. We've had an eventful couple of weeks in Washington, D.C., but we do have a Speaker of the House. It's Speaker Kevin McCarthy for Bakersfield. It did take 15 ballots to elect a Speaker, but with Speaker Pelosi now stepping down as her role as Speaker, this is a golden opportunity again for the Golden State. So this development has allowed the committees to organize in the House. The Senate is also continuing to organize. The biggest issue in Washington, D.C. right now, however, is the exceedance of the nation's debt limit. And this will likely take several weeks, if not months, to resolve and will take up a lot of bandwidth. In the meantime, the Treasury's Department is beginning to use extraordinary measures to avoid defaulting on obligations after the United States officially hit our debt limit today. This came sooner than expected. It has created some sense of urgency and anxiety on Capitol Hill and in Washington, D.C. and in general over the upcoming likely showdown to increase the debt limit. Several want to leverage this must-pass legislation to raise the nation's borrowing authority to extract significant federal spending cuts. The Biden administration and others are resistant to participate in negotiations around these cuts that would view popular programs as a non-starter. The Treasury Department warned that extraordinary measures to cover the debt will be exhausted by June. So if Congress fails to raise the debt limit by then, there is some uncertainty in terms of what this will do to the nation's economy. In terms of things that are pertinent to SCV Water, by way, quick recap, we did have several victories heading into calendar year 2023. We had a victory on the Water Resources Development Act. We got the authority to obtain technical assistance from the Corps of Engineers on volatile organic compounds. This is similar to the help that the Corps of Engineers offered SCB Water back in the late 1990s related to perchloric treatment. And additionally, for FY 2023, Congress was able to complete the 23 funding process right before the holidays. Our funding for Arundel removal and restoration work at Bouquet Canyon was included in the final bill. So we'll be working over the next several weeks with the Army Corps of Engineers and the United States Department of Agriculture's Natural Resources Conservation Service on how those funds will flow. It usually takes several months before these funds do get executed by the agency. On our end, we've begun the reconnaissance effort with the agencies to get a better understanding of their processes, and we'll likely have SCB Water engage at the appropriate time once we have some better intelligence on that process. In terms of turning to FY 2024, the President's budget proposal is supposed to be delivered to Congress in early February. We anticipate that schedule will slide to the right by several weeks. Once delivered, though, that will kick off the annual appropriations process on Capitol Hill, and we'll be engaged in that exercise on some potential SCB Water projects to propose to our congressional delegation for inclusion in a final FY 2024 appropriations package. I have to say, while it's unlikely Congress will enact a final piece of legislation by the end of the fiscal year on September 30th, the last time all 12 appropriations bills were enacted on time was in 1996. We have to prepare to have our project proposal or proposals to our congressional delegation by March of 2023. Congress is getting adjusted to the practice of designating funding for projects. This does put more authority back into the legislative branch pursuant to their Article 1 of the Constitution obligations. It does take some flexibility away from the agency. The 10 bills that were eligible for earmarking for FY 2023, there were more than 75 earmarks that were included in the final package. In terms of the regulatory agenda, the Biden administration did release its updated unified regulatory agenda. This includes updated schedules on rulemakings at EPA and other federal agencies that are pertinent to SCB Water. Included in that agenda is the updated timing on the proposed rule for the national primary drinking water regulations for lead and copper. The EPA is considering revising the final lead and copper rule that was published in January 2021, and they're expecting to publish additional proposed amendments in August. In terms of PFAS, we're getting signals we'll see a PFAS drinking water standard notice of proposed rulemaking in March of 2023, with a final rule scheduled to be published in September of 2024. In terms of PFAS being designated as a hazardous substance under Superfund, we're expecting to see an announcement of a proposed rulemaking maybe as early as next month, February 2023. And then lastly, in my write-up, I included a pre-publication rulemaking related to the waters of the United States. This got published in the Federal Register yesterday, January the 18th. This codifies the pre-2015 guidance. It will go into effect in 60 days. This is likely the first of two separate WOTUS rulemakings. The second one, anticipated later this year, will likely create an entirely new regulatory framework. If you guys recall, the 2015 rule under the Obama administration expanded federal jurisdiction based on Justice Kennedy's significant nexus test. Trump administration rule, the Navigable Waters Protection Rule, reduced federal jurisdiction by relying solely on Justice Scalia's relatively permanent test. The Biden administration rulemaking, they did clarify some exemptions like waste treatment systems, artificially irrigated areas, and all this is taking place with the Sackett versus EPA WOTUS litigation in the background of the Supreme Court. We expect that verdict any day now, but that likely will have a significant impact on the second rulemaking. As anticipated, yesterday's WOTUS rulemaking has led to already a couple of litigants suing to halt the process. There's an industry coalition that filed a lawsuit as well as the state of Texas. We do expect many additional lawsuits, those in support and those that are opposed, either that it's too broad or it's too narrow. So with that, thank you for the time tonight. It's good to see everybody. We have to answer any questions you have for me.
Questions from the public on this or comments? Any questions from the board?
Go ahead. Hi, Mr. Bowman. Good to see you again.
You too, Director Armitage.
So one comment and a few questions. The comment was, thank you for your write-up. I always appreciate it. And you noted in a couple places that you had reached out and thanked the legislators who did put in funding requests for us. So thank you for specifying that. And I appreciate you taking the time to do that. In terms of the questions, for the $50,000 for the Upper Santa Clara River Watershed Management Project, and maybe this is a question for you, Mr. Cole, can you remind me of what projects this would help with?
Certainly I can, and Jeff can help through too, but okay. That one was really geared towards Arundo.
Arundo, okay.
Yeah, and so we did have a much larger ask in for that one, but we were happy to see just that we were recognized. This mainly came through the senator's request, so okay. I think it's a start. And it's not for a specific project yet, but it's some seed money that we can use to help, I think, get us in a position that we can be better prepared to apply for additional funding and putting together a strategy on how to deal with Arundo.
Okay, thank you. And then under the Water Resources Development Act, in the memo, it mentions that $50 million was slated for LA County, under which SCV Water would qualify for assistance. And do we know who else is competing for that money?
Jeff, you want to walk through that? That was kind of an interesting.
We went through the process so the House bill included a similar piece of language that specified two non-federal sponsors, one of which was SCV Water. The Senate bill had specified another entity as a potential non-federal project sponsor. In the final equation, they decided not to specify potential non-federal project sponsors and have a blanket Los Angeles County Section 219 authority or Environmental Infrastructure Authority. So we are eligible, but we're not specifically listed. So I would say that however many municipal water districts are in Los Angeles County would be eligible to apply under that authority.
Wow. So basically everyone?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a free-for-all.
In LA County, yeah.
Yeah. Do we think it's going to become a free-for-all?
It'll be interesting. I think it's going to take a level of sophistication, one, to know that the funding is available. Okay. It's kind of not a very well-known, I don't think, authorization. So, okay. But we do know one other water agency because they were actively lobbying at the same time for inclusion. And so I do think that they're going to definitely be sophisticated in their approach and trying to apply for the funds. Okay. So I think, you know, for us, we're going to have to decide what type of project we would want to pursue under that authorization.
Okay. And then in the same paragraph, it says the bill authorizes the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to provide technical assistance for the remediation of VOCs. So we just approved funding at the last board meeting, right, for treatment facilities for VOCs. So how does that tie into this?
Go ahead and go first, Jeff,
okay.
And then I can add
okay.
in.
Yeah. So in an Appropriations Act in 1999, there was an authority provided to the Corps of Engineers to offer technical assistance to entities in the Santa Clara Valley area to address perchlorate cleanup. And that work, as I understand it, has been executed and helped with some of the treatment projects that SCV Water now carries out. And so what we wanted to do, since sort of the next contaminant of concerns was VOCs, we wanted to modify that authority to do two things. One was to, again, have the Corps of Engineers offer technical assistance. And then we also wanted them to offer construction assistance. We did not get the construction assistance piece because water quality and water treatment is not really a mission or even an ancillary purpose of a Corps of Engineers project, but we did get the piece where they could offer technical assistance similar to what the authority that was provided by Congress in the late 90s that was carried out in the early 2000s. I wasn't working for SCV Water then. I'd worked for the committee in the House at the time. But that's as much as I can remember on the fact pattern.
And Director Armitage, just a little bit about how that actually played out in the last time the authorization was there. So we did access those funds collectively out here. Cal State Lake Water Agency at the time was, you have to have like a sponsor that works with the Corps to do this work. And there's in-kind contributions that that are usually a part of these as well. So at that point in time, we hadn't had a settlement agreement with Whitaker yet. And so, but we knew we had impacted wells, and we knew we were going to have to start spending some money trying to figure out how they were impacted. And so there was a contract that was put together with Army Corps. There was a consultant that was let through that contract that basically did a lot of the groundwork of modeling and drilling test wells, sampling for trying to determine where the source of the pollution was coming from. I believe it was about a $10 million kind of level of effort. Don't hold me to exact numbers, but it was definitely in the multi-millions that was authorized and helped us understand the complexities of the contamination and where it was emanating from. So much like this time around, because VOCs, we had to go through the litigation strategy again, because the party wasn't owning up to the responsibility. We felt that this approach would be also a good approach to take as kind of a boots and suspenders, you know, approach to being able to go and make sure that we have the technical information that's necessary to understand the plume and migration of the plume and those things. So I think there's a couple things going on right now. The water agency is working with Department of Toxic Substance Control. So they have a order over the site. They're really the regulatory entity that is overseeing the site cleanup. And they're the ones that direct the responsible party to do things. And right now we're making requests through them to do additional monitoring and drilling of wells.
On the site?
And off. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that's all. It's a live process that's going on. And the way I've always looked at these types of things is it helps to bring solutions forward. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, people just get polarized and you end up litigating on everything. And so these types of opportunities present themselves and potentially can bring additional funding to understanding the issue.
That's complementary to what we're doing anyways.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect way to say it. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's how we view it. And I think there's a lot of opportunity here to think about whether we do that engagement or not. But this allows us the pathway. And I think what you hear Jeff talking about a lot tonight and the strategy that we're really trying to employ as an agency is aligning those pathways, because they're long plays that you have to go through. You have to get legislation. You've got to get in. You've got to talk with people. You've got to get legislation. You've got to be able to kind of align, you know, where you want to go, but it's a process to get there at the end. And so I was very happy with Jeff and his team, because we're starting to see those things do that. And I think long term for the agency, it's going to be a really good way to go about it.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation. And then my last kind of closing set of questions is, I'm curious about your opinion, given your history and the work that you do up there. with Kevin McCarthy being speaker now, do you think that it will help bring more resources to water issues, given his home base is, you know, Bakersfield, Central Valley? So that's the first question. And secondly, do you have thoughts about the committee assignments and how they could potentially also affect resources to water?
So let me work backwards. Let me answer question number two first, and let me get to question number one. So your senators and your congressmen are very well positioned since one is on the Appropriations Committee. She chairs the Energy and Water Subcommittee. That's Senator Feinstein. Senator Padilla is on the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. That's the committee that has jurisdiction over the Clean Water Act and the Water Resources Development Act in terms of modifying those laws, authorizing projects and programs at the EPA and the Corps of Engineers. And your Congressman Mike Garcia is on the House Appropriations Committee. You know, that's the committee that funds the federal agencies that we interface with. So I think in terms of the delegation, we are well positioned moving forward for the next 2 years. The second question, let me try to answer it this way. So if there's one thing I've learned in this business is that to get anything done in Washington, it typically has to be bipartisan. And one of the things I've noticed where there are a lot of bills and pieces of legislation that stall on a lot of issues, water infrastructure policy and water infrastructure funding finds a way forward. I'll just give you three recent examples in the last 2 years. Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. There was $55 billion for EPA, $8 billion for the Bureau of Reclamation, $17 billion for the Army Corps of Engineers. Bipartisan bill. Water Resources Development Act 2022. I mean, that bill had so much horsepower, they stuck the Defense Authorization Bill on it. The defense of the nation rode on a Water Resources Development Act. And the third piece was the bill that included our funding for Arundel removal in Bouquet Canyon. That also was a bipartisan bill. So there's bipartisan sentiment for the things that everybody in the room and myself works on. You know, we're not working on issues that don't have a future or don't have an immediate future in the next 2 years. We're working on things that will steadily make progress. So I do tend to be a little bit, you know, more on the sunny side of life on this, but I've just seen too many times where water bills make it through, where other bills get stalled. This is the fifth Congress in a row that they've enacted a Water Resources Development Act. And there's no sign that that's going to come to a halt.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Yeah. Okay. Hi, Jeff. I am new to the committee, not new to the agency. Well, a little bit new, but not new to water. So good to see you.
You too, Director Goodsight. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, I have a couple questions, you know, getting my feet wet on this. That's a bad pun. But on the Corps of Engineers work, is the reason that they are involved in our valley is because Whitaker was a military contractor? I'm guessing they wouldn't normally be engaged in helping communities unless there's some military tie-in. Is that what's going on?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. So what we're working with is the Civil Works Mission. It is part of the Army. It is part of the Department of the Army. They typically, you know, their three main mission areas are navigation, harbor improvements, inland waterway improvements, locks and dams, flood control, and aquatic ecosystem restoration. Now, Congress has given them some limited authorities on treatment, technical assistance on water quality, but they're very limited, and it's just typically not a great fit for the agency. But we did find a way for LA County. We did find a way for the technical assistance piece. I think we'll continue to refine our Water Resources Development Act requests over the next several months, because we'll need to start thinking about what we want to do for award of 2024. Even though they typically pass at the end of every Congress, we'll probably want to be thinking about things to propose to the senators over the summer, because their process starts a little earlier than the House, and then engage Congressman Garcia on the same items that we've discussed with the senators. But we've got a couple of months, I think, to kind of get our heads around, you know, the idea of maybe there's a way forward for something specific for SCV water within that overall Section 219 construct for environmental infrastructure.
Okay. And what is usually our cost share on that? Is it 50-50 or?
So if you're doing something like a Arundel removal, that cost share will be 65% federal, 35% non-federal. Mm-hmm. And then operation, maintenance, rehab, and replacement will be the responsibility of SCV Water. In terms of Section 219 environmental, it's Section 219 of 1992 as amended for those scoring at home, as we used to say in baseball. That's the Environmental Infrastructure Authority that the Corps has. That's what they're doing with Los Angeles County. That cost share is 75% federal, 25% non-federal. And again, operation, maintenance, rehab, and replacement is 100% non-federal.
Okay, that's pretty good. Okay, and second question, and I was curious, you mentioned the Sackett versus the EPA case. Is that, in generality, the one where they said only Congress can make rules and these agencies can't? Is that what I read
As I understand, Sackett, that is related to the construction of an artificial pond on sort of in a remote location in Wyoming.
Okay, so is that specific to the Waters of the United States issue then?
Yes, Sackett proposed that the Kennedy test was an overreach. And the Kennedy test was it had to have a significant nexus to a water body in order for it to be a water of the United States. So we expect that verdict here shortly.
Okay, so that's really specific to that. I thought there was a case, you know what I mean, who knows how it comes out in the paper versus what it actually says, where they said that essentially the EPA can't make a rule. I'm just going to throw this in. I don't think it was greenhouse gas, but let's just say they can't regulate methane. That process should have gone through Congress. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Director Goodside, I apologize. I'm going to have to get back to you and do some research before I do so.
Okay, I will find out what that was and just email it through Steve.
Okay.
Because I was just curious. That seemed very bizarre, and that would instantly grind all the agencies to a halt if that was accurately stated by the newspaper, but
it certainly would impact their ability to carry out rulemakings.
Okay. Well, I'll find out what that was, because I thought that might have been the second, but it's clearly not. So thank you for that. And if that is it from everybody, I think we'll move on. And thanks for your update.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Take care. All right, and next up we have item 3.2, Dennis Albiani and friends from California Advocates.
Thank you, and welcome back, Director Armitage and Director Goodside, and back to the agency. Appreciate this new committee and the time that you're all putting in, and we appreciate the opportunity to serve with you for this year. So the legislative session has just kicked off. And they're just starting to draft bills and get them into legislative council. Tomorrow is the legislative council deadline. And so that's an ongoing timeline that we don't really know what's been submitted to legislative council. But then it starts coming out of legislative council and the bills start getting introduced. So we're just at the beginning of bills being introduced. And that timeline will be February 17th. When all the bills are introduced and ready to start being heard. We have a 30-day requirement. The bills must be in print. And so really the hearings and the policy discussions on these bills will start at the end of March and then go right into April. So that's really the timeline that we're working on right now on bills. Anna Lee, who I think many of you met, but we'll let her introduce herself in a moment. But she's going to talk about the budget. But January 10, the governor rolled out his budget, and she'll go all over those and some of the opportunities there, as well as some of where the cuts were provided and some of just the general discussion about that. And then tomorrow, I actually will be on the state, serving for Santa Clarita on the state ledge committee for Aqua. And so that's an ongoing conversation there. And they're, you know, going over some bills. We work with staff to, you know, review those if there's anything controversial and go through those. And that's just beginning that process as well. So that's where we are kind of in the general process. And Annalee will also discuss some of the committees, which just came out last week. The Senate came out, and then yesterday the Assembly released their committees and how that'll affect some of the policy decisions as they go forward, including new budget sub-chairs and members of those committees as well for the budget. So basically, when we look at some of the issues that are currently out there, and I'll just talk about some of the bills and then kick it over to Annalee, and she'll go through some of those issues. We have the biggest bill that's been introduced so far is SB 3. That is likely to be the Senator Dodd's bill on ratepayer assistance. So right now it's a placeholder. We've met with Dodd's staff, went through that. It is, you know, they're generally their intention to add that to be the bill out there that will do ratepayer assistance. And they do intend to pursue a similar conversation they had last year. Remember, SB 222 was vetoed by the governor. Some of the conversations wasn't lined up with the budget. And then there were still some issues on which agency should have which controls, and then where there's a funding source. So those are some of the outstanding issues on that discussion. And that bill is one of the primary bills so far. While there aren't a whole lot of bills that have been introduced yet, I will go through a couple other general discussions that are occurring. There is a resources bond that's being generally discussed, through AQUA's engaged, some of the resource entities, some of the environmental community, and that's just its very early stages. It would be something, if it was passed, it would be on the 2024 ballot. And so it has a year and a half to mature and go through the process. But that's likely to occur to have some conversation over a financing mechanism through a bond, resource bond. Again, very early in the process. There's also some conversations about establishing water supply goals, developing water supply. This has come over the last few weeks when we shifted dramatically from a very severe drought. And again, is that over yet or not? That's a conversation ongoing. But now, as you all know, we've had, extreme weather throughout the state, but definitely in Northern California, where some of that water could be captured. There's actually, conversations about how to best manage the water for both, obviously, surface storage ideas like Sites Reservoir, and how do you get those to come to fruition, or raising those vaqueros or some of those. But also, how do we get that into the ground for groundwater recharge in those areas? So there's some conversations just starting on that. And then finally, we've been involved, and again, this is in the report, because again, this happens, real time. And had several conversations with staff last week about State Water Project, the process, and the pumps. And with this much water going through the system right now, there's probably less opportunities for fish impacts to run the pumps. Currently, the pumps are running generally on average about 6,600 CFS. They can go as high as 15,000, but there's discussion about, the biops and whole different conversations about, flushing out the system and how long you have to wait. And they actually have boats in the water that are looking at taking surveys on smelt and all that. So that's an ongoing conversation that has been occurring over the last week and probably will occur for the next several weeks on what would be the appropriate amount to pump to get the extra water through the system, and then, how we can best manage that resource without impacting the environment. And so those are some of the big conversations that are currently going on. Let Annalee go through her budget points and some things on the committees and go from there. Thank you.
Thanks, Dennis, and good evening, directors. My name is Annalie Aiken. For those of you who I haven't worked with or met before, this is my fifth year at California Advocates, but during most of that time, I was attending law school in the evenings. So I'm now a lawyer and an advocate here, and will be working closely with Dennis on water-related issues on behalf of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency. So I really look forward to working with you all. As Dennis said, I'm going to be reviewing some key components of the state budget each year on January 10th. That's the constitutional deadline for the governor to release his proposed budget for the fiscal year. So in California, the fiscal year begins on July 1st. So this is really the first step in the budget process each year. So the most anticipated factor for this year's budget was how the administration is going to be addressing the budget deficit. Also referred to some, you might see in publications, people call it the budget problem or the shortfall. The governor proposed his $297 billion budget with the estimates that the deficit would be $22.5 billion. This is a little less than what was anticipated. In the fall, the legislative analyst office thought there would be $24 billion shortfall. And there's still experts still differ on the actual number of it. The LAO actually refers to the budget deficit as $18 billion because there's $3 billion for inflation-related costs and $1.4 billion in capital outlay shifts that experts disagree on whether that should really be considered a part of that number. So if you're seeing publications with different numbers and different reports of what the budget deficit is expected to be, that's a little bit of context for why experts are kind of disagreeing on what to actually say. That being said, this is just what's anticipated. The next step is the May revise, where there'll be a little bit more data to work with from what we get back in April. The governor's plans for addressing the shortfall include funding delays, reductions, shifting funds. So it didn't feel as bad to hear because some of the ways we're responding to this are kind of pushed back to future years. There's $13.6 billion in reductions and delays, and then $4.3 billion in just shifting costs. For water and natural resources specifically, there are multiple areas where spending was either reduced or delayed. Notably, too, was the climate change package. So originally, this was a $54 billion package over multiple years. It's been reduced now to $48 billion. Part of that $6 billion reduction was $2.5 billion cut for the zero emission vehicle program, specifically vehicle incentive programs such as rebates for car buyers and charging infrastructure. $1.4 billion of this will actually be coming from cap and trade funds, though. So the net decrease is really only $1.1 billion right now. And the governor's administration is going to be pursuing additional federal funding. And then also they've stated they might be looking into a possible bond measure to help offset this loss, too. Another component where there was a loss was for the PFAS cleanup program. So there, in this proposal, there's a $70 million reduction for this fiscal year. And then in the next fiscal year, the 24-25, there's another $30 million reduction. And so this, they're keeping about 65% of what was allocated. So that still is a significant loss there. More specifically related to water, this budget includes $202 million for flood protection. So this is $136 million for urban flood risk reduction, $41 million for Delta levees, and then $25 million for Central Valley flood protection. There's also $125 million for drought-related activities. This is just a one-time allocation, and they're going to wait for more specifics on these drought related funds. When there's more additional information in the spring, actually, and they're going to look at what, you know, as Dennis said, the state of the drought. So there'll be a little bit more information on what funds are actually needed and where, but there's just $125 million set aside for that right now to be more specifically earmarked in the spring. And then there's also $4.9 million to help agencies with groundwater recharge permits. This is from a new pilot program from the Department of Water Resources and the State Water Resources Control Board. There's also $7 million to implement last year's SB 1157 by Senator Hertzberg. This is the bill that changed the standard for indoor residential water use. Another factor that the governor spoke about was triggers that are in place in this budget. So, you know, if there is the chance that revenues are higher than anticipated and the state is not experiencing as much of a shortfall, then there's triggers for these programs that have been cut. So they'll be automatically restored. You know, there's little expectation that will actually occur, but it is good to note that they would be automatically restored if that were to become possible. Another factor, just as I said before, this is just the governor's first proposal. As the state has more information coming in the spring, the governor will release his May revise. And then following that, we'll see the proposals from the legislature. So this is really just the first big step in the budget process and kind of what gives assembly members and senators the framework to work around when they're assessing their priorities. There are a number of new legislators, too, in Sacramento. And as Dan said, I'm going to be going through some of the committee changes. There's been quite a few. Just yesterday, actually, the assembly finally released their full committee membership. And to note for us is that the Assembly Water, Parks, and Wildlife Committee, they have the same chair, Assemblywoman Rebecca Bauer Cahan. But notable is that the new assembly member, Pilar Schiavo, representing Santa Clarita, is a member of that committee. So that's good to note for Santa Clarita. In the Senate, there is a new chair to State Budget Subcommittee 2 on Resources, Environmental Protection, and Energy. So that new chair is Senator Josh Becker from Menlo Park. And then Senator Min now is the new chair of the Senate Natural Resources and Water Committee. Senator Stern used to be the chair of that committee, and he still is going to be a member on that committee. Back in the assembly, a new chair is Steve Bennett, now chair of Assembly Budget Subcommittee 3 on Climate, Resources, Energy, and Transportation. So those are just a few highlights of the committee chairs and memberships for you to know. I'll kick it back over to Dennis, unless there are any questions.
We'll see if there's any. Does that conclude both of your presentation? No. Okay. Any public comment on this? Any public comment online, Kathy?
There is not.
Seeing none. Okay, director comments or questions? Okay, go ahead, Ms.
Thank you for the written report and your presentation. It's nice to see you again, Mr. Albiani. I'm glad to be back on this committee and working with you. It's nice to meet you, Ms. Is it Aiken or Akin?
Aiken, yeah. Thanks, Director.
Nice to you. Congratulations on finishing your school and now moving on to new things. I'm looking forward to working with you too. So, yeah. Okay, so I do have some questions. In the introductory section under the governor's proposed budget, which is page 6 of our packet, it mentions that there was a $3.9 billion reduction in trigger reductions. What does trigger reductions mean?
I can answer that one. Well, go ahead, Emily. Well, go ahead, Emily.
Dennis, if you want to go ahead, just to make sure you
So they're looking at, as Annalie mentioned, they're looking at the revenues as they come in, and they always do a May revise, and that's typically May 10th, right around there. So if there's more, if their projections actually come out higher, meaning there's more revenue than they predicted in this model, then some of their reductions will automatically trigger. So I actually attended the finance committee meeting. He did a luncheon and with the Cal Chamber and, you know, attended it. And one of the questions was asked, well, okay, how are you proportioned if it goes up $1 billion? How do the trigger cuts come back? And he said, no, it has to come back $3.9 billion or more above their projections. And then all those cuts will be restored. And so that's how they did a trigger reduction. So they reduced it. If the revenues come in $3.9 billion more, they'll you know, restore those cuts.
Okay, so it's what she was just talking about then. Okay, yeah. Thank you. And then the section that talks about the reductions in the budget, it specifically mentions PFAS cleanup and water recycling, which are two of our main areas that we're looking for funding for. So I guess my question, and I'm not sure if who wants to take it, is does this potential reduction affect any of our pending funding or grant proposals?
It shouldn't impact ones that we've already have in the system.
Okay.
At least that's my understanding. Dennis, correct me if I'm wrong, but it certainly will make the pot of future grant applications smaller that you would be, you know, participating or trying to participate in. So it'd make it more, I would say, competitive when you're going through the process.
Yeah.
Okay. It shouldn't impact our current.
Good. Okay.
And we just FYI, we meet on Wednesdays before this meeting. And so yesterday we reached out to the State Water Resources Control Board about specifically chemicals of emerging concern. That pot of money exists that currently exists. We're trying to get information on how much is still there and then the process. And so we are exploring additional opportunities there.
Okay. Thanks. Next, so the list of proposals for sponsorship and support by AQUA, you have a list here of 5 legislative proposals. So the first one, I'm on local government committee, so this is familiar to me, the proposal to add water charges to the property tax bill. And last I heard in our committee was that they were actually, your committee was going to hold it for a little more discussion because there were some issues that there were some concerns around. So I guess have those already been resolved and we are going to move forward to support, or I guess I'm asking where that stands.
Okay.
The second one seems pretty self-explanatory to me, but then if you could maybe briefly explain 3, 4, and 5 as well, so I could kind of understand what those are.
Sure. So tomorrow's the meeting, and that's typically a several hour meeting, and you know, folks come from all over the state and participate in that meeting. So we'll know more tomorrow afternoon, and typically we'll send some information up to Steve and Kathy, and get that. And again, I sit on that committee, but it's a very big committee or a relatively large committee. And so about each proposal. So you want 3 and 4? You asked about 1. Wait,
No, 3, 4, and 5. If you could just give a super brief, explanation on what those are.
And we have the packets. I don't mind sending them to you. You know, it's all there, and AQUA has them on online and everything. But legislative 3, water lodge and judges adjudication. They've been working for several years about trying to get additional expertise in the judicial branch on water, and so this would give additional appropriation for essentially educating law judges more specifically, and actually putting a preference for judges that have a background in water, because frankly there's so few and it's very sophisticated. And that goes just the challenge on that, just so you know, is the judicial branch does not like to be told how to run their resources. There are access to judges. Access to justice is a term, meaning that if we put one group above or we dedicate more resources there, That means somebody else is not getting access, whether it's a civil, you know, lawsuit issued or criminal courts. And so, you know, how do we handle that? So those are some of the controversial elements. But so Aqua and the water community is taking some things to educate them better and then see if there's a preference that can be given rather than have a water court or something like that where there's just these waters, which was actually tried several years ago and it just it did not get there. So this is adding on to some of the educational sides. The 218 implementation, that came out of the legal committee. And so it gets very detailed and it's still there is a committee, a subcommittee of the committee that is working on the final language for that. But essentially what they want to do is on rate cases, when you do a 218, you raise your rates, you have to meet 218's requirements. What this says is under current law, say 2 years later, somebody could come up and say, hey, this rate structure is actually illegal, unconstitutional, and doesn't, and you didn't do the balance, the identifying the benefit to each parcel as they're assessed. How much you know about 218, but that's what's required. So they can sue and do that. What they want, what this proposal would do would essentially make it more like an administrative procedure process. Where like if you, when they're making rules, you have to come in and testify and build the record. Okay, that's how administrative processes work. And then, so you have to put in your objection to be able to reserve your right to sue later. And you have to be very specific about what those objections are. And there's a certain timeline in there. So essentially, it's requiring, in order to be able to go sue, you know, a year later, you would have to, you know, put your objections in up front and before the board votes on it. And so there's some value to that. There's an interaction there. You're identifying what some of the default measures are and what some of the problems are with this proposal. I mean, with your rate proposal at a board level. I'll discuss the negative side. The negative side is also, you know, these rate cases are very, you know, you hire outside economists, you hire outside folks, they do this whole analysis and go through. This requires now, I'm Joe taxpayer or Joe property owner, that I have to understand your rate case so much and then, you know, maybe hire somebody as well at that point to engage in the process before it's even been adopted. And so I think there's a rub there. And then, frankly, it would cut off access for property owners and ratepayers to sue even over a unconstitutional because of 218s in the Constitution rates and fees. And so kind of there's that rub back and forth. What's the proper balance between getting some information early on and understanding what the objection would be and maybe having the opportunity to repair it or fix it when you do your rate case and cutting off people's access to justice. A few years ago, worked very closely on a bill that said you can no longer wait a significant period of time because there was no statute of limitations, and it narrowed it down that now you have to file your lawsuit, and forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think it's within 90 days, and there's certain notice requirements and things in that area, and that was passed and sponsored by Aqua to do the back end, and this would require participation on the front end by anybody who's concerned about the rate system. So, but there is a balance. I think some your elected directors that you know, people would find out afterwards that this rate case went through and then be barred from participating in the legal process, even if it wasn't there. So it's a balance, and that's why they're still trying to write that. It came out of a legal committee, so it's very, esoteric and specific, and that's still evolving. But they are doing that bill has been approved at this point. For final approval once they get the language, but they have the intent to move forward on that one, was one of the motions earlier back in October. And then So there's on five, I'll use the example of the Hertzberg bill last year that says you have to meet a specific gallons per minute by certain dates. There's a belief, and I think it's fairly commonly held, that if you just have that one target out there, then a targeted requirement, I guess, then it would disincentivize boards from investing in desal and recycled water, because even if they invested and had the best darn recycled water program in the, you know, in the area, you wouldn't get credit for that. So at the last minute of last year's bill, the Hertzberg bill, the governor agreed to give some recognition through the regulatory process for these kinds of investments. It's going to be like 10%, and that's kind of the conversation. But, you know, legislators from San Diego, Marys, were very concerned that they have a $3 billion project they're invested in to create regional water. That was under Brown administration. It was, you know, regional water supplies and create water. They invested heavily in that, but you really don't get any credit for it. Mm-hmm. And so this would provide additional variance or credit for incentives for recycled water, desalinated water.
Okay, thank you. And then just the last thing I'll say is, Ms. Aiken had talked about the committee assignments, and I peeked at them yesterday too when they came out, and I was really excited to see that our Assemblywoman, not only is she on Water Parks and Wildlife, but she's on Utilities and Energy and Emergency Management, which I feel like all three dovetail really nicely into the work that we do. So I feel fortunate that she's our Assemblywoman, and hopefully, like, we have her ear. So I thought that was great. I just want to mention. That's it. Thank you.
Yeah, she met with the staff locally, with the committee, and then our firm has a meeting with her, I think the 2nd of February. We look forward, and we've met her several times, more formal, how you do those and how we do that with all the new legislators. But there's 32 new ones. So yeah. It's kind of exciting to get to know them all. I think there's going to be some new blood, new ideas. But there's also, you know, that's also consternation about the new people, how it's going to operate and that. And they bring, you know, a different culture in. And so it's very exciting.
Yeah.
All
right.
Thank you. I just have a couple questions, Dennis. What is the atmosphere up there? I talked to previous guy, you know, what you see and what I see is in the paper, what you see. But we had the drought, you know, there was some news, you know, implied that Governor Newsom was concerned about that and wanted to take action. And then with the rain, people say, well, we should have done something. Obviously, we can't build stuff instantly, but, you know, we should have been more prepared for this. What is the attitude now that we have gotten the rain? Is there a feeling that any of the infrastructure projects will actually move more quickly than they have been? George Skelton just wrote today that we are moving on things. It's just glacially slow. What are you seeing up there? Is there an attitude that we will work more quickly on these infrastructure projects, or do you not see that?
I do. I do see that there's an opportunity here to work quicker, I guess, to identify some of the barriers to some of these projects and do that. That's around the tips and the edges. It just takes, these are very, very big infrastructure projects. When you look at something like Sites Reservoir or even raising Los Vaqueros, where you already have it, but you want to raise it. And there's very sensitivity to how that affects the ecosystem downstream, how that affects even how you allocate the water. And so those are all areas that maybe some of our predecessors did not take as much time to evaluate on some of these projects. And so that's, you know, one of the reasons it takes so long. I'll tell you, but just an example, I was in a meeting today for a big water infrastructure meeting where a bunch of folks from all over the state were at. And they had met on December 20th with Secretary Crowfoot, and it was all about drought. And he wanted specific actions to that they could do to deliver more water, like right now, or see water in the system. And so there was, you know, some of the discussion was about water transfers and clearing that up. And frankly, they're even slower than they were. You know, kind of COVID has slowed that down. Some of the staff responses, things like that. But transfers and exchanges. And we talked about some of the just the little things you could do to make it go better. And using, there's some things reclamation can't do, but state water can, and then vice versa. So when there's limitations on that one, what can you do on the state project? For some basic stuff in those areas. But that was a December 20th question, and now the folks got together and they were answering that question. But the other part of the meeting was on, now what do we do about the statewide system and how do we catch water? But not only catch water, how do we do a better job with just flood control? How do we do a better job with not only surface water storage, but groundwater storage? And what's necessary to do that? So that was the conversations. The second half of the meeting today was about those issues. So, you know, and the folks are, I mean, the general public is very fickle, meaning, you know, now they're worried about floods and things. And, you know, 3 weeks ago, we were worried about drought. Will the interest from the general public last long enough to, for instance, pass a bond that funded some of these ideas in 2024? That's the real question, you know, that there's a whole nother year and a half and a whole nother water cycle between those two things. But I mean, that's our job. That's what we do.
Right.
And so those are some of the questions and discussion. So I do, yes. But some of these things are very big, complex systems, and you don't want to do something that makes it worse necessarily. And so I think they're looking at all that and trying to balance it.
Okay. Well, yeah, just, you know, coming off of our Water Resources Committee, I mean, I know we were very committed to sites, and that doesn't need to bond. It just needs to keep moving. And what about the conveyance improvements? Are those going? That would be independent of a bond at this point, right?
Yes. That project is still being analyzed, you know, as the single tunnel concept. And so with various intakes. And so that's a, you know, that's obviously a very complex project. And they're in their review process, and then everybody will go back and have to approve it again. And I know there were some that was very controversial in several boards from, you know, in various areas across the state. And so that's a ongoing project and one worth a further conversation.
I guess I would love to see somebody say, let's do this now, instead of having conversations for decades upon decades. And then the other question, I think that I'm going to say that was it because I can't remember. Oh, here it is. Just a quick thought. When you talk about 218, and you very well know that we put in a ratepayer advocate into our agency act, and is that, just want to see if that, you know, that would have any role in the feeling that the public could participate and understand 218 cases, because we in our area have a ratepayer advocate available, so they could, the public has a full right to call up and ask for a meeting with the ratepayer advocate or ask for more details or have things sent to them. I just thought that that was interesting that our founding boards agreed on that, and that was what it was for. And I just wonder if any of that discussion is coming up on 218 modifications.
Well, As you know, there were several elements of that. I get called a couple times a year about, you know, your act, and it was controversial as it went through, as we all know. But now it's viewed as almost my terms, not there, but a model act. I mean, people are like, okay, how'd that go? And Senator Stern talks about it, you know, consolidation, all that, and how it went through. And so I will tell you that ratepayer advocate was visionary. I mean, it was really, my opinion, that's something that we don't have statewide like you do on utilities. So there's a ratepayer advocate at the PUC, there's that. So that's an example of a visionary view that I think would provide your ratepayers additional assistance in understanding this. And maybe even, you know, that it might be that person's job to articulate, to make sure that, you know, the local taxpayer groups know that this rate study is going on, and make sure they participate, those kinds of things.
Right.
So I think that would be something that could be discussed for statewide. But again, anytime the state comes and tells locals how to do their governance, yeah, that gets it anxious. Right. And so they'll say, well, that was great. Santa Clarita did that. You guys are awesome. But right. We're not sure we want to do that over in Riverside County or up in,
yeah,
you know, Tulare County or wherever. I'm just.
I like that idea. And I just thought it's a way for people to be more informed and engaged, but not a lot of places do it, and not a lot of people know about ours. So, but it's still kind of cool, and that might be one solution if people are concerned about ratepayers not understanding a complex case up front. Just about. But I look forward to hearing more from you guys as the year goes on, and I appreciate your presentation tonight.
Yes,
one more question from Director Armitage.
I'm sorry, thank you. I forgot. I didn't get this far in my packet when I was asking my questions. So the new SB3, which you say is a reinvention from last cycle, SB222. So you're saying, because the language is very different when I read this, are you saying this, it's going to change back to what 222 was essentially? So you're going to change it or?
Well, okay. All speculation, but not speculation. We've talked to the staff and you know, it's what we do. That they're very interested in doing ratepayer, you know, assistance again. And I've actually talked to Dodd several times about it. We were at a thing at events in the fall and that. And you know, we talked about it, said, hey, we have folks that are interested in this and what's going on and you know, where are you? So we're doing that, and that this is likely the vehicle that it changes back to 222. And, you know, really similar language to that. I think they're working on what's the approach that works best, maintaining local control, maintaining the opportunity to have a funding source, because I can tell you there's very little appetite for instance, an assessment locally. So, you know, there was one time there was a proposal to do a dollar per tap out there or whatever that you would send to Sacramento. And then Sacramento would send a portion of it back to do ratepayer assistance, for instance. There's not a whole lot of, among your colleagues in the, what I'm told, you know, in the boardrooms, they don't want to assess their people, send it to Sacramento, and then hope that some of it comes back. So it's, how do we fund that? What is the proper funding source? And those kind of things. So I think those are all the conversations going on. And he could, you know, we have till February 17th, less of the staff member could change that and say, oh yeah, no, I'm going to do this one. We didn't want to do that and that bill and move on. But at this point, and I was just in Dodd's office 2 days ago, talking with the staff that this is likely to be a conversation about ratepayer assistance now.
Okay. I mean, that's interesting to me because last year we had a surplus last year, right? And now we're facing a deficit. I don't know how they couldn't find funding last time. I don't know how they're going to find funding this time for it. So that's why I thought, well, this is interesting because they're changing the approach. And this, the way it's currently written is really kind of putting the onus onto the regions or the agencies to figure out how to find help for their customers, which, you know, you've heard me say this many times before. I
I think the spirit of 222 is right? And I think it's unfortunate that they weren't able to find a funding source for it. So anyhow, thank you for clarifying that and helping me understand that it might morph it in.
Anytime.
All right. Thank you, guys. All right. We'll move on to 3.3. Local matters presented by Hunt Brawley of Poole and Shaffrey.
Good evening. First of all, welcome, new chair. Goodside, and welcome back, Director Armitage, to the committee. Just some highlights, then obviously open up the questions. The Safe and Clean Water Program, which I report on a monthly basis, once again had its meeting canceled on January 5th, expecting we will meet on February the 2nd, where hopefully we will consider the approval of the most recent project, which is a Via Princesa new park and filtration project. Not a lot from the Board of Supervisors, which I monitor, specific for Santa Cruda, a small residential project up Sierra Highway, a grant for the local homeless shelter Bridge to Home, and then some continued efforts on the countywide community workforce agreement. Regarding the city of Santa Cruda, they had their reorganization meeting on December 13th. The three incumbents were elected or reelected. The state or the city approved its new building code at that meeting. And then they had a fairly brief meeting, first meeting in January, where the main activities were to appoint to the commission appointments. And I noticed that I did not send off, and I will do this, the list of appointees, but they were basically reappointments with the exception of Planning Commission. Councilman Bill Miranda replaced Dan Mesnana with Patsy Ayala. Patsy has been a legislative staff person for a significant period of time, most recently with former Assemblywoman Valadares. So she will now be on the Planning Commission. I will remind the committee, especially with a new chair and Ms. Armitage coming back, that one of the main issues we'll see in the next couple of months with the city council is that they will be releasing maps. My latest information is sometimes in February for the new districts. Starting in 2024, there will be the two council seats up that year. And those incumbents are Cameron Smythe and now Mayor Jason Gibbs will have to be in districts. And one of those districts will need to be the majority-minority district. So how that plays out, and then the other three districts have to be also approved. And it's not just up to the council, not just up to the public. It is the plaintiff's attorney has the ability to object and take it further to court. So my expectation is that will be a very fluid process, and they must have it completed by June of this year. Heard the comments about our new assemblywoman. I know Kathy can talk about the meeting that was the staff had. I attended her swearing in the rain last Saturday. It was very well attended, and an impressive display of support from other elected officials, both local and statewide. Her staff, I think, which is advantageous to us in the Santa Cruz Valley, are experienced in our community. Her district director, Andrea Rosenthal, worked for former Congresswoman Katie Hill, knows the area quite well, and her field rep, Andrew Tubman, is used to work for Assemblywoman Christy Smith. So I think we'll have good opportunities to work with her district staff on issues that are important to the Valley and to help educate the assemblywomen on the Santa Clarita Valley. And then final, I know it was mentioned last meeting, Senator Wolk is no longer the minority leader of the state Senate. He is in his last 2 years in the legislature because of term limits. There's already movement on candidates running for that seat. there remains a fairly strong rumor that former Assemblywoman Valadares will run in that seat as well. It's a seat that is Santa Clarita up to the Antelope Valley and the Victor Valley. And then Senator Wilk, now that he's no longer minority leader, has become vice chairman of the Senate Problem Solvers Caucus, which is a bipartisan organization of members of the state senate of both parties, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in his last 2 years. And that's my report.
Thank you. Do we have any public comment on this? Any public comment online? No. Okay. Any director comments or questions? Okay. Director Armitage.
Thank you. Thank you for your report. The first thing I want to say, thank you for adding information about the Board of Supervisor meetings. That's new to me since I've come back onto the committee. And it's really good to see. I personally like to watch the City Council meetings, so the information in your reports, it's nice for me to see again, but I feel like I kind of already know that, but I do not have time to watch the really, really, really long Board of Supervisor meetings. So thank you for providing that information. Few questions. So for the Safe Clean Water Program, is the Via Princesa Park, is that a new location? I know they were talking about a Via Princesa, but I feel like this one might be a new version of that project. Is that right?
It's the current Metrolink station that's being moved to Vista Canyon. And that is where they're looking to put the park.
Is that the one they've been talking about for a while though?
Yeah, it's been discussed a long time, for a long period of time. The city of Santa Clarita approved a significant multimillion dollar planning item last year to start the planning process that would include the public on how that would, what would be in there. And I think you were off the committee at that, by this point in time. It's kind of humorous that there was a lot of discussion that they needed more pickleball courts. And a lot of pickleball enthusiasts were at that meeting. So that gets planned out. But part of the project is also to deal with Measure W and having infiltration and recapture. And so it's going to be a multi-use process as it goes forward.
Is this one that we like? Because I know there was a couple that, like, many groups in the community weren't exactly excited about temperature with this one.
Yeah, I can just tell you my perspective. I think the bang for the buck has been challenging as a member of the committee. I'll defer to other people. I know Steve serves on the committee as well. We've had fairly small projects, one up in Hasley Canyon, in Castaic, two in Pico Canyon. I'm not sure any of them have been completed yet. And this one seems to be maybe a much larger, more comprehensive project that can meet multiple needs and seems to have a lot of excitement. It did get a very good score through the scoring system that the county has for Measure W. So I think this one will be one that can be hopefully a model going forward of projects we can do.
Okay. And then that's good. That's what I was looking for. So thank you for sharing that. And could they possibly modify the other ones that people are not so excited about going forward?
There is some discussion on the Pico Canyon ones. It seemed of their way of combining the two projects since they're so close. There were some tours conducted with members of the committee, but I'll be candid. I think county staff is not excited about that and seems to have some concerns, but they have committed to continue to look at some potentiality if those two projects can be combined. So we'll see. I would not hold my breath, though.
Yeah, I mean, I just have the Via Princesa one, it's a new park too, right? And so I think when you look at as Hunt's trying, is communicating here, this overarching value, when it's just the kind of stormwater treatment thing, it's tough because it's super expensive. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty much the same amenity that you have as far as the community is concerned. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's providing a kind of a function, but with Via Princesa, a little bit different because it's a whole new amenity for the community that's going to be included along with a significant infiltration system.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Okay, moving on. So the reference to the board approving the countywide community workforce agreement with the Building Trade Union, does that just provide guidance for county agencies, or is it agencies within the county boundaries?
It's county agencies. Okay. And this is something they had previously approved, and the negotiations apparently have been going very slowly. So it's the board trying to finalize those agreements so that it can be implemented. There's a threshold of $5 million value for county projects for it to be applicable.
Okay. And then lastly, in regards to the districting for the city council positions, I've heard rumor that there is a loophole that can be used to possibly push districting beyond 2024. What's your sense on that?
I would not plan that would occur. I think it's a little bit difficult because almost all the discussion has been in closed session because it's pending litigation, and so you just have to kind of pick up things you hear in the community and get a sense of the process. But the council did vote to settle the lawsuit. I think the council understands that fighting it is just not feasible with the status of the law and the examples of other communities that have spent millions and millions of dollars. And they want to have at least some say in what the districts are. So I would be surprised that it doesn't happen. I think the expectation is, obviously, if there's a delay and it can't be implemented in time, that's a different issue. But I think the plaintiff's counsel, everything I've seen and what I've read that he has submitted that's been public and disclosed as part of agendas, is that he would fight very hard for it not to be implemented in 2024.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Right. Thank you for the update. We are done with that. We will move on to item 4. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Take care. All right. I need that. Yes.
I was trying to click on this. Yes, you're still good. All right, item 4. Lindsay, if you'd like to go ahead and get ready and share your screen on that, I'll do some introductory comments. Perfect.
Am I sharing my screen yet, or are you still seeing me?
No, we can see it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Good evening, directors. Well, you hear about our programs and campaigns throughout the year as we do them, you know, either through social media, you see it before we talk about them here. We like to, once a year, come back with just a high-level overview of what we've done and provide some of the statistics that we've seen come from those campaigns. So we have Lindsay and Lori here tonight, too, who'll be helping to present this. Lindsay will manage the PowerPoint. So if you can go to the next one, Lindsay. So this is some of the items that we'll talk about tonight briefly, and we've divided it up. So we're going to bounce between the three of us as we talk about just some of the highlights on these things. So Lindsay is going to start us out talking about our drought efforts.
So good evening. I'm Lindsay Gibson. I'm the Senior Public Affairs Specialist. And as Kathy mentioned, I will be leading off the conversation with drought. In 2022, drought was our main outreach message that we shared with our customers. The overarching focus was keeping our message in line with the state regulations. And in April, we activated stage two of our water shortage contingency plan. Locally, our focus was really giving our customers the information and the resources that they needed to take action, saving water, changing their landscapes. And as you'll notice, in September, we focused on our CII, so commercial, industrial, and institutional customers, and their compliance with state regulations. So this is for non-functional turf, and also with HOAs and their CC&R enforcement during the drought. And so highlights for that, we reached out with email blasts and developed print materials to help explain those regulations to that specific customer group. But the key takeaway here is that since the stage two declaration in April, our customers have saved 2.2 billion gallons of water between the months of May and December of 2022 compared to that same time period in 2020. So that's a huge number. And, you know, our messaging, you know, hopefully struck the right note with them. So moving on to our drought tools, we used all of the outreach tools that we have at our disposal to get our messaging across to our customers. And some of our highlights include our website, which is the hub for all of our information, with over 61,000 page views during 2020. And our press efforts. So we had a couple interviews, TV interviews with local news, and specifically with Telemundo, with our colleague Laura Gallegos doing interviews with Telemundo. So reaching our Spanish-speaking community, which, you know, is something that we've never been able to do before, and has definitely expanded our reach. Digitally, our special edition e-newsletter has an average open rate of over 56%, which is pretty unheard of for government agencies in general. But we have a great customer group that they like to stay connected and well-informed. So we're happy to share the information with them that way. And as part of our paid advertising efforts, our drought video ads had more than 280,000 online views during 2020. So just some of those highlights. Let's see. And this slide just has a couple quick visuals. These are just a few examples of our many outreach efforts of 2020 for the drought. And more importantly, this is kind of a look at what's coming up in our next 60 days. So we're working on updating our seasonal messaging, but really we want to remain versatile so that we can capitalize on the current and the recent precipitation events and connect our messaging to it. So, you know, it's really more that reminder of, you know, keeping your sprinklers off in the rain and after the rain and, you know, until the hills are green, you know. So if the hills have no irrigation and they can be green, you don't need to turn on your sprinklers. So really just connecting those messages together. We're going to work on some other storytelling opportunities with the city parks and landscape maintenance divisions. So what we found is most of the community doesn't really realize what the city's doing during the drought and that they're really doing their part, because we've actually had customers ask us, you know, like, what's the city doing? Why do I have to conserve, you know, if the city isn't? And so that's not true. The city is. And we really want to share their water saving efforts and the other things that they're doing, like complying with the regulations, such as not irrigating non-functional turf. And then just a quick snapshot for the city's water savings. From August through December of 2022, the city has saved 19% compared to that same time period in 2020. So basically, another way of saying that, they've saved 347 acre feet or over 113 million gallons of water in 2022. So that's pretty amazing. And it's something, you know, that our community should know. And again, kind of getting that community vibe and just, you know, if they're doing their part, then so can I. And lastly, we're going to look at developing a drought dashboard for our website. So we've done some research and we found some examples. Our next step is to determine how to showcase our drought data in a way that makes the most sense to our customers, but it's also easy and easy to understand. Okay, next is KHGS, our Home and Garden Show. This was exciting because it was our first real, like, big in-person event after COVID. And we had more than 3,000 people come visit our booth. And, you know, this was just that opportunity to be out in the community again, to connect with our customers, work on building those relationships. You know, we got to spend time with them, answering their questions, discussing various water topics that they were interested in learning about or didn't quite understand. And we're looking to get ready for the 2023 Home and Garden Show, which is scheduled for the end of April, so April 29th and 30th of this year. Now I'm going to pass it off to Laura Gallegos for our next section.
Thanks, Lindsay. Hi, I'm Laura Gallegos. I am the Public Affairs Specialist for SCV Water. We're excited to share that our school education programs have returned to the in-person format as of August 2022. The educators do a great amount of outreach for the programs. They email all the Santa Clarita Valley elementary schools, teachers, and they also deliver goodie bags to those teachers with promo items and brochures. The response from the teachers was overwhelmingly positive, and virtually all the slots for the 2022-2023 year were filled by November 2022. Next slide. So the figures on this slide have been updated since the agenda was posted. So the numbers I will be sharing are different than what you see here. Attendance for the education program for the 2022-2023 school year is off to a great start. For the 2022 calendar year, we have some updated numbers. We actually had a total of 8,518 students and 562 teachers from the elementary schools go through our education program in 2022 alone. We also have a program for high school students, the Environmental Science Workshop, and that had 182 students register this past summer. Now, I am personally most excited about our landscape and gardening workshops this year. In 2022, we hosted 12 classes virtually, one class per month, and attendance was higher than it has been in the last 3 years, with 513 virtual attendees. We promote our landscape workshops through an e-blast that goes to over 20,000 contacts, and we send out monthly press releases that are published in the Signal. We continue to get feedback from attendees that they wanted classes to be offered in person, so we've brought back in-person classes quarterly. We just had our first in-person session in January, and we had 35 attendees show up for the proper pruning workshop. Folks were very excited about being back in person after tuning in via Zoom for 3 years. Now Kathy will take over the next slide.
Thank you, Laura. The communications team works alongside all of the other departments in the agency to assist or lead communication plans for different projects that happen. So listed here are a few that we helped with in 2022. I mentioned just two in particular that are going to be carrying over into 2023. The engagement gap analysis has been talked about a number of times at this committee and the board, where we then exhaustive demographic research to determine those audiences that we thought we could make other and more efforts to reach. So we have a draft engagement guidebook that was one of the deliverables for that project. And we have, this is January, but anyway, it's actually been February. We have training for staff on that guidebook coming up. And all project managers and anybody that's customer facing will be invited to attend that training, just to raise awareness across the agency for those important issues. The other one I want to mention, Bridgeport Conservation Garden at Bridgeport Park. This has been talked about at a few different committees, and I think it's also been at the board. We have assisted so far with outreach to the neighborhood and the school there, as we sent out a communication briefer that we worked with conservation to develop. We've got great response back. A teacher there at the school, they have a student club, like a green club kind of thing, and expressed interest in participating. So my team is part of a team that is going to identify opportunities for meaningful involvement by the students at Bridgeport Elementary with the park, as well as how, as an agency, we can use this new resource. Laura has some ideas already for landscape and gardening workshop, maybe do one there at that location. So it's just going to be a great, great resource, great pilot project that will hopefully lead to more of these around the community. And that's just an example of the type of stuff we do with other departments. Next, please.
PFAS was overshadowed a little bit by drought this past year as a critical issue, but it nevertheless is very important to the agency. And we took whatever opportunities we could find to communicate about it. We updated our website regularly, had the good fortune to celebrate an in-person ribbon cutting at Valley Center. We had some great coverage and were represented in some national press on the subject. And we have also worked on early outreach for an SRL's project at Bridgeport and to continually communicate just about what's next coming down the line for our treatment plans. Next. Customer care. We are an important partner with customer care in a lot of their communication efforts. This year, Lindsay worked closely with them and designed the communications plan and collateral material to roll out at last a unified billing system and online portal that is the same for all customers. This has required some customers that had to take new steps to still access their account. There was a lot of moving pieces and things were timed just a certain way. So we helped with that whole effort and it went very smoothly. And one more for me. And then internal engagement. So we work obviously with external communications, but my department also does the internal engagement. As we finally were able to come back and start meeting in person, we formed an impact committee, employee activity, all volunteer. We have almost 20 people. They're very enthusiastic. They cross departments and they helped put the holiday party together. We did some Halloween stuff in-house. And we are meeting, our next meeting is here in a week or two to plan out the rest of the activities for the rest of the year. So excited to be back. And then also part of internal engagement is Laura has continued to just raise the bar on our pipeline employee newsletter. Hope you guys get that and read that. You know, our goal is just to get as many faces and voices of our agency in that newsletter each time. And now I will turn it back to Laura.
Thank you. So last year when we presented to the outreach committee, we set the following goals, and they were to increase engagement, create a consistent brand across all platforms, and to utilize Nextdoor. So I'm happy to report that in 2022, we met most of our goals. Our audience grew overall by 22% on all our platforms. Our engagement surpassed our expectations and grew by 156.5% in 2022. And that was by creating high quality content and videos. We featured staff and the work that they do. And at the same time, we humanized the agency. The public now knows a little bit more about the people and the team working day in and day out to provide a clean and reliable water source straight to their homes. And that was done by us being intentional with our planning, our content, and we really focus on creating a consistent brand across all our platforms. Now, keeping in mind what we accomplished in 2022, we set out to fine-tune our goals and strategize for 2023. We want to continue to increase our engagement by continuing to do what we're already doing, plus highlighting construction projects and sharing updates on the work along the way. We also plan to focus on agency and industry infrastructure. Our audiences engage the most with content that has to do with our work, with our crew working in the field and on main lines. Sometimes we need folks to not just know about SCV Water, but to also know about the California Department of Water Resources or the State Water Project, just to name a few. Another goal of ours for 2023 is to utilize LinkedIn more, since it provides an opportunity for us to connect with customers, our staff, and the industry in a more personalized way. We can also showcase our agency for recruitment and as a leader in the water industry in our region. So digital ads. We currently have a few platforms that we use for digital ads. We measure the effectiveness of the digital ads through impressions, engagement, and digital click-throughs. An ad impression is counted each time our ad is shown on these pages, so on the Signals or Spectrum's websites. The click-through rate is a measure, a CTR, is a measure of the times an ad is clicked on versus just seen as an impression. I hope that made sense. Just to highlight a few numbers for you, our banner ads through the Signal alone had 15 million impressions during the 2022 calendar year. We also have a partnership with the Signal through paid boosted posts on their social media. On average, each post they publish, our content gets over 5,000 impressions. So about 20,000 impressions per month just on their social media account. Another highlight is there are about 60,000 folks who get a daily email blast with our banner ads through KHTS and the Signal. Our messaging, our campaigns for those ads change monthly to reflect the season or the agency priorities such as drought projects or conservation rebates. So now I'm going to hand it over to Lindsay for website.
Awesome. Thank you, Laura. So as you may or may not remember, I gave a sneak peek of the look and the feel of our new website at the October Outreach Committee meeting. From there, we did a soft launch in middle of December, which helped us identify a few places that needed a lot more work before we decided to actually launch the site. So right now we're working on those areas. We're finalizing the format and the functionality of our board and our committee meeting sections. And we're wrapping up just a couple other items before we launch. And we're getting closer to the finish line, but rather really than rushing to get it done, we really want to get it right. So that February launch goal really is going to be more of a guide to ensure that we remain on track. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Kathy for a few additional comments on the website.
So as we mentioned in October and probably in December and several other times over the last year, project has taken a long time, way longer than a website would be expected to take or should take. And there were a few milestones that we hit that we thought, do we need to just start from scratch and start with somebody new? But each time we were able to negotiate with the contractor, the consultant, recognize the investment that we had so far, not just money, but just the time, the relationship building, how far they had gotten along, that we do like the look as it's coming through. And we really are down to three items on the critical punch list, just three. But they're three big ones. They all have to do with mostly with the agenda table functionality. So we've had April is our partner in this. So we've had meetings with Lindsay and I in April and Terry just working through those page by page and column by column. We're there. It's going to be awesome. We found some ways to really simplify what we were asking them to do. Something to keep in mind is before we were a WordPress site, this is a new platform. It's Drupal, which is just another web building platform. So something we had here isn't necessarily exactly able to be replicated. So they need to find ways around it we just need to find a better way to do it. So we're close. February 1st would be awesome. But as Lindsay reminded me today, as we were running through this, like we want to be right first. It's been this long, you know, if it's a couple more days, it's a couple more days. But we just really appreciate your patience and hope you continue to have faith in us that this is going to happen. And so now on to 2023. I think we had a great year. Lindsay, go ahead and stop sharing and let's see everybody's face here. Gallery. Yeah, we've had a good year. Lindsay and Laura have just done so much work. There's just been so much that has come out and we have our grateful to have our hands in so many places in this department. I hear from colleagues of mine, they're like, you know, how do you get a seat at the table? How do you get them to tell you things? And we just don't have that here. Everybody loves to share with us so that we can spread that same story. So appreciate these two very much. And Casey, our event coordinator, that
that helps us with our outreach stuff and home show and those kinds of things.
Great.
So do you guys have any questions about that?
Let's see if we have any public comment first. Nope. Seeing none. Any no online?
Nope.
Okay. Any director comments or questions?
Several comments. I think to kind of piggyback off what you just spoke about, Ms. Martin, I think this is just another example that shows kind of the intra-departmental or interdepartmental collaboration that happens at the agency. That's really nice to see. And that just benefits in so many ways. So, yeah. Okay. So thank you for the presentation, Ms. Martin, Ms. Gibson, Ms. Gallegos. Another great presentation. Love sitting and watching this. It's amazing to me how much you've accomplished in a year, along with an ever-changing landscape and working around an ever-changing landscape. So it's just a lot of work that you've done, and you can see it, you can tell. So thank you for everything, and to your entire team that has been working on this. And we mentioned this has led to a significant amount of water that has been conserved in our entire valley. So it's really, really important work. So let's see, I'm going to skip through some of them, but I don't have too much time. I'm still particularly impressed with the Telemundo interview. I thought that was fantastic. I hope that we can continue to do that into the future as well.
We just did another one a week ago.
Awesome. Awesome. I love that. I love that. So thank you for that. In terms of, thank you for highlighting the amount of water that the city's actually saved, because I think you're right. I think the city kind of gets hammered, maybe undeservedly. So thank you for mentioning that. And an idea popped in my head. Maybe it would be kind of a nice PR thing too, to go to a city council meeting and present them with a certificate or something, and, so that it's kind of in the public's eye. And maybe that'll help also continue the partnership we're trying to build with them going forward. So just an idea that popped into my head. The K-Hits from Home and Garden Show, I thought that too was kind of a highlight, I think, of the year. I will say that I was a little sad. I thought the butterfly garden was fantastic, and it drew so many people, but my heart was just a little bit sad to know that probably most of those butterflies did not make it through that weekend. So I don't know how we can work around that.
They actually have, like, the ones they bring, they only have a lifespan of just a few days. So they weren't going to live that much longer. I was the same way. I'm like, this is kind of sad in here. Butterflies don't last long.
Okay. All right. Well, if we're getting them at the end of their lifespan and they're giving their lives to community service.
And they're getting all sorts of that little special
treat. They're getting fed the whole time as they're dying. Oh, goodness. In terms of the school education programs, I love that the students are back. Kudos to our teachers. I mean, teachers deserve all the love in the world. So I love that they're able to connect with the students in person again. I love that our gardening workshop attendance is growing. That's impressive. That's a significant jump. So you guys are doing it right. I know when I first came on, I tried to pop in all of them virtually because I wanted to learn too. But it's been a little while, so I might try to hop into some of them too and do some more learning. So. I'm almost done wrapping up here. What's that? The internal engagement, I think that's so important. And I think some people would look at that as like, well, is that really necessary? Is that fluff? But I truly think it's a really important component because you're building a community within, and you're making a place where people want to come to work because know each other, right? And you're supporting each other. So I think that's really key. And so thank you to everybody who volunteers their time on that committee to make all these fun activities happen. And I love the pipeline. I love when it comes through my email because I like to read it. So thank you for that. In terms of social media, I think it's really important to humanize the agency. I've kind of noticed that those seem to be the posts that get the most engagement too. So I love seeing those. So continue to do those. So here's another thing too. I watch Palmdale's social media too, because of beauty, right? And they have a hashtag best crew ever. And I'm like, wait a minute, what's our hashtag? We need a hashtag for our crews too. So
I think Laura came up with that hashtag when she was at Palmdale.
Oh,
God, you need to steal it back. Well, maybe we're best SCV crew ever. I don't know. But we need a hashtag for sure. Yeah, that's the same. And then I'll just close my last thing I'll say is that I spend way too much time online. So I have seen the ads, the digital ads, and I get excited every time I see them. And then I've seen the TV or cable ads, whatever you call it, on as well. And I definitely gather the family members. So it's exciting to see. So kudos. Awesome job. You guys are an amazing team, and thank you for everything you do. That's it.
Yeah. I can reply to one thing. We actually are working with the city on doing some videos and some things to highlight their job efforts.
Good. It's good to hear.
Good. I like the certificate you did too.
I mean, it's really hard to follow Kathy. So I'm just going to say ditto everything she said. And I think that part of the internal engagement is why, you know, everybody's willing to talk and bring things to you. It creates that work environment where just everybody wants to be a part of it. So it's really great. I actually had two questions. So my first question was, well, it relates to the website. Do we have like a button for the drought ready SCV on our website that can redirect in a very easy way?
There is there now.
The new one.
Yeah.
It'll be in a nice prominent place where people won't have to dig through the website to find it. Awesome.
We have the option on the front page to have different spotlights on whatever issues are top of mind. So we'll
be able to send it to people there. Great. And then my second question was, can I see the gap analysis handbook?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can we get a copy of that?
Sure.
I'm really curious to see how that happened and all that.
I can actually probably invite if any board members wants to come to the training. You'd be Ooh. Welcome to.
Yes.
I'm saying that. Let me verify that is okay. I don't want to make it a public meeting.
If it can happen, that would be awesome.
Okay.
I had another question, but then I got distracted by other stuff that was going on. Mm-hmm. So if I remember it, I will ask it. But as I said, all in all, like, thank you guys so much. It's amazing. Like, going 22% in social media and the gardening, like, it's just everything. It's really great work. Thank you.
I have a couple of quick questions or thoughts. The city certificate / highlighting the city, were we not also doing some customer highlights as well?
Yes.
Like either home, I was thinking, you know, different categories, homeowner, maybe a business or a small business.
I know we're working on identifying a lawn replacement program to do a
little story on.
Conservation was working on identifying some accounts that might have some stories for us.
Yeah. Okay.
We've talked about that lately, though.
I think just, you know, seeing what other people can do motivates others. I mean, we talked about that water resources a lot. What initiated the website? Like, what do we want to change? Or what was the motivation for doing a new website?
Several. Do you want to do that one, Lindsay?
Sure. And please jump in, Kathy and or Steve, if there's anything I leave out. Truthfully, our current website is not the most user-friendly. I've heard that externally. I've heard that internally. It's very hard to find things. It's not very customer-focused. And so, again, the new one, we really spent the time in the beginning mapping out how would a customer get this, you know, get to this? How would they find the bill pay? You know, so we really tried to put like that customer experience at the beginning the design has to look great, but it really has to be functional. And that's where we really wanted to make sure that we were checking all the right boxes, you know, making sure that you know, we that any kind of customer would be able to come. Another thing too is like the accessibility portion of it too. So people who might not, you know, have trouble seeing, you know, if they have a screen reader, you know, we want to make sure that it's laid out in that manner. And so that's what the developer was helping us with on the back end. So it's things that as, you know, maybe an able-bodied person might not be able to notice or pick up on, but somebody who needs that extra resource or needs that extra help is going to be there. And I think that's really most important. Kathy, please jump in. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head what else we were focusing on.
Yeah, I think that hits the highlight. There is too, just generally a website has about a 5-year lifespan and you just want to refresh it so it looks more current and fresh and clean. And ours was looking, it was looking dated. It was just ready for a,
I was struggling to find the packet for today on the website.
Really? Yes.
And I'm like, I know I've done this before, like once or twice.
So yeah, we, like she said, we spent a lot of time just on the navigation side before we moved on. So hopefully those things will be a lot more, a lot cleaner and easier.
And then do we have a contract to maintain it? And will it be with the, it sounded like there is some delays with this vendor. Are we staying with the current vendor for maintenance of the website? Or obviously, are we going to get the rights to all the materials so that we can, you know, contract that out with someone else? If we want
both. So the contract to have it built includes a year of maintenance and things. It is 100% ours from the beginning. Our staff, Lindsay and Laura in particular, have been trained and know how to, like, they could go in and make pretty much any edits that they need to. But we've had this company that has been with us for several years that were like WordPress gurus. And at the time we first started this, they didn't do Drupal. Mm-hmm. And so as we were getting ready to make the switch, I was like, oh, Kevin, I'm so sorry you guys don't do Drupal. We could really use you. And he goes, oh, we do now.
Oh, okay.
So it's like this just retainer and they are super responsive when we need something. Because I mean, otherwise we were doing all the updates ourselves. So if mm-hmm. we need, hey, could you build a new page about this topic?
Right.
They usually have it done. Usually same day. They're just great. So we will be continuing with them.
Okay, great. Terrific. All right. That's all. Okay.
I remembered my question.
Good.
It was about the gardens, the conservation garden in Bridgeport. So I know that the Theodore Payne Foundation does these tours of gardens in the spring to kind of highlight and demonstrate and give people ideas of what their yard could look like. And I'm hoping that we could put something together like that as well. And use the Bridgeport, you know, anything that we have already to also help navigate people there. Yeah. I think that that's the biggest hurdle for most people when they're talking about replacing their turf or trying to do any kind of landscaping is really what is it going to look like and mm-hmm. trying to find ideas of established yards because, you know, when somebody just plants something, it's hard to see what it's going to grow into. And it's kind of like, trust me, it's going to be amazing. And it's
And also in a specific space. So you can go out to like a Theodore Payne or somewhere that has like this massive amount of space and they do their landscaping differently than if you have only 600 square feet. It's going to look very different and feel very different. So yes.
Yeah.
That's actually the like one of the main purposes of this garden and in a kind of a unique process. Matt Dickens, God, I don't even remember how many, like several different landscapes,
like four different
architects have set up different types of gardens in there. All the plants will have signs that identify what type it is. And they'll each be like a theme, like, you know, whatever.
Mediterranean.
I think though that there's also value to see how just regular people did it as well, because, you know, we're doing it. We have all the experts, we have all the, you know, all the ways and hows and all that. But it's like, okay, so what did my neighbor down the road do? Like, what does that look like when somebody isn't a professional or, you know, because again, not everybody can hire somebody professional to do it. So if they're doing it themselves, you know, so if we can make that a more accessible in a way, do a tour or something like that. Have people like submit
success stories.
Yeah, have people. It is meant to be accessible and something like someone could say, "Oh, okay, I can do that at my home without the help." Mm-hmm. But that was one of the things that I mentioned. Like, we'll have school interaction, but we talked about having our own events there. Like Laura was wanting to do one of our garden workshops there, where those landscape
designers are there that could talk about just what actually our next garden class is landscape design, our next one in person. But having an event there where we have a booth, do a pop-up thing in Bridgeport Park and do some interpretive stuff for the garden.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you guys. Appreciate it. We are moving on to item 5, which at least the write-up looks short.
Yes, ma'am.
I don't know if there's a day off.
Because of the report with this day, I touched on anything I would have talked about on number 5. So I will pass them out if anybody has any questions.
All right. Any questions?
I do have a question about 5. So on the sponsorships, so I know we have historically done a sponsorship for Maven's Notebook, which I fully support because she provides an amazing amount of information in a very digestible format on a regular basis. And my question around that, though, is, so the gold sponsor of the organization receives a 1-year subscription to Maven Weekly Water Blast and 1 year to California Water Library. How do we get to benefit from that? Like, and not just the board, I mean, staff, everybody involved in the agency. How do we spread that resource so that people know how to access it?
Yeah, that's a really good point. The first year that we did that, we did kind of a blast, like, hey, we're part of this. If you want to access this stuff, you can. And the last 2 years, we've just rolled it over and haven't done that. So
I think it's such an untapped resource that people could be benefiting from. And I mean, I donate to her personally because I think it's a valuable, and I will continue to donate to her personally because I think it's valuable, but it should be used. So how do we use that? I'd love to know that.
I think that's good. All right. Anything else? No public comment on that? All right. Item 6, planning calendar.
That's just there for your
reference. All right. Then item 7, Mackens. That is adjournment. And you're going to adjourn in memory of RJ's participation in this committee, I guess, before.
Yeah, I think so. We didn't really get a chance to close out RJ's stint on the committee. I know we did because Lynn was here, Director Flemback, and we got to kind of say some nice things, and just wanted to make sure we had an opportunity to do the same for RJ. He's obviously been a member of the board for a long time and was a very good contributor to the committee. So I thought that would be nice if the committee liked that.
Great, that sounds good. Will you let him know that we
adjourned? We can do that. Yeah. And I did give him a card from the staff thanking him for his service to from the committee. So, yep, that was all.
Sounds good.
All right. I can stop recording now for real.
Yep, for real.
And he's going to have to fix my mess and post 2 different things.
Cheers.